Now the Monuments Men, the group of museum directors, curators, art historians, and others, including some with ties to the Nelson Atkins here in Kansas City, who raced to save Europe's art treasures during World War II, even as Adolf Hitler was hoarding them and making plans to destroy much of them. Joining us now to talk about all this is Robert Edsel. He's author of the book, The Monuments Men, Allied Heroes, Nazi Thieves, and the Greatest Treasure Hunt in History, which has been turned into a Hollywood drama opening this week. He joins us on the line this morning from WGBH in Boston. And Bob, it's nice to have you.
Robert Edsel here. It's great to be here.
Julian Zugasagoitia is director of the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art. And Julian, good to have you too. Good morning.
Great. Thank you for having us.
Mackenzie Mellon is a department researcher at the Nelson Atkins with a focus on European painting and sculpture. And Mackenzie, nice to have you too.
Thank you. Morning. Good morning.
Well, Mackenzie, why didn't this story get much more attention before now? Because it's such an amazing story.
You know, that's a really good question, actually. And I think that the Monuments Men movie coming out has given us the opportunity at the Nelson Atkins to really focus and showcase on the wonderful history that we have. The curators and the former directors that served as Monuments Men in both Europe and in Asia.
Robert Edsel, why didn't this story get more attention until now?
Well, these men and women came home after the war, but they didn't return in 1945 with the troops. Their work really was just beginning then, and by the time they came home in 1951, after having returned some 5 million objects, more than 4 million looted by the Nazis.
4 million, Bob. That just takes my breath away.
Yes, it does. And by that time, we were involved in a Cold War. And these monuments officers, like other World War II veterans, just wanted to get on with their lives, resume their already established careers, and get back with their families. And so they, like the other World War II veterans, didn't come home and bang their chest about what they'd done. I've talked to 17 monuments officers. I've presided over the funerals of some. There are only 5 still living. And they realize now that was a mistake, that it was something important to be talked about. And so fortunately, now their day's coming.
Hmm. Well, Julian, obviously some very strong connections to the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art, which you head. What are those connections?
Well, we're humbled that the Nelson Atkins has 6 of these figures, these heroes that worked and also, I think, established what the great Nelson Atkins is.
Including our former directors of the museum, right?
Exactly. Our first 2 directors, Paul Gardner and Lauren Sickman, were heavily involved, one in Europe, the other one more in the Pacific. But both were of this elk, of this very important humanists that were saving the cultural heritage.
And does the museum actually have pieces that were saved during the war here in Kansas City?
Actually, we have one.
I thought so, yeah.
One of our greatest pieces of art, Nicolas de l'Argilière.
That's right. I'm glad Augustus you said it, not me. Thank you, sir.
So it's a beautiful 18th century portrait of the Elector of Saxony, the King of Poland, and in all his regalia with a full costume overlooking what would be ruins or a city that he might be devastating or conquering. So it was a fitted that this work might have been predisposed to be in the collection of Hitler, you know, and in the plundering. Now, the story of this painting is amazing also because it was saved by the Monuments Men. It was given back to its original family, the Rothschilds, who subsequently sold it to our dealer in New York, and that dealer called our curator, our first curator of European art, Patrick Kelleher, who he himself had been in the salt mines, rescuing these works of art. So, a full circle, he is offered this painting and gets it for the Nelson Atkins. So, Imagine the arc. Now, another thanks to the visibility, thanks to the attention that this story is getting, and again, the riveting book that Mr. Edsel wrote is what brings all this possible to light, is that the wife of the son of George Stout, the character that is going to be played in the movie by
George Clooney,
yeah, lives in Kansas City. Again, all of this serendipity, and brought us the other day the notes that Mr. Stout, George Stout, had. And there you see the salt mine where this painting was hidden. So so many connections and such a beautiful stories to be told.
Mackenzie, when folks come to the Nelson Atkins to view the galleries, is the story about this piece that Julian just described, do people understand that once they've looked at that painting? Is there a description there that tells them this is one of the pieces that might have been involved here?
Thus far, no, because it's just really something that's recently come to light in our research in the European department.
Yeah.
Provenance research is such an integral part of what we do at the museum, and we've just recently put up a webpage at nelsonatkins.org that describes all of the work that we're doing in provenance research, as well as an additional webpage that focuses more on our Monuments Men, and a separate page on the Nelson Atkins role here on the home front, which was being a safe haven or a repository for private and museum collections from both coasts during the war. So check out our website for those wonderful new additions.
So in other words, Mackenzie, what you're saying is that as these pieces were being found and then safeguarded in Europe during the war and after the war, some of them were sent here to Kansas City to be held in safe hands, right?
Well, actually, these were collections that were mostly already here. We did have some foreign collections, but these were collections that were already here in the U.S., including the Phillips collection in D.C., a private collection that was owned by Robert Lehman, the financier, and Yale University Art Gallery, Portland Art Museum in Oregon. They all understood immediately after Pearl Harbor that the possibility of air raids here on the mainland in the U.S. was becoming a distinct possibility, and they need to do something with their art. So they contacted the Nelson Atkins, and Paul Gardner, who was still there for the first year, was able to arrange for them to send their works to the Nelson, and we could store them during the war and keep them safe just in case.
Julian, just for yuck, say the name of that piece one more time for us again.
Oh, the Nicolas L'Argilière.
There you go.
Exactly.
You do that so well. Robert Edsel, how did the Monuments Men even begin to know where to look for the art? How did they know where to go?
Their work began not as the art detectives that we will end up knowing them best for, but as cultural preservation officers. This was in a vision that George Stout, who was a pioneer in the development of conservation of works of art and old enough to have seen military service the last year of World War I, developed in between the two wars. He watched with great horror the advent of the firebombing technology in the middle of and following the Spanish Civil War in the mid-1930s, was in contact with museum curators in Germany that were writing about the very alarming events of Adolf Hitler's rise to power and the removal of works of art from Germany's museums that were considered degenerate, and was convinced there would be another war, and began planning, even before Pearl Harbor, about how to protect not only the cultural treasures in this country, but the visionary thought that in the process of Americans becoming involved in World War II, the great risk of defeating Nazism was destroying so much of Western civilization's treasures inadvertently in the process of fighting our way across Western Europe. So the initial effort of the Monuments officers, including Paul Gardner in Italy, which is a story I tell in my most recent book, Saving Italy, was to serve and try and steer Allied bombing away from churches and monuments, hence the name Monuments Men, and once on the ground, effect temporary repairs to the churches and other historic structures, both in Sicily and Naples in Italy, and then again along the Normandy coastline that were so severely damaged by Allied bombing. The idea of becoming these art detectives was something that evolved as they realized the extent and premeditated nature of the Nazi looting. And their effort really was random. It was just a matter of being resourceful and asking 1,000 times of many different people, where are these works of art, what clues do you have, and then assembling them, the good scholars and students that they were. And, of course, it led in the final days of the war, the last 2 months of the war in April and May 1945, to the discovery of almost 2,000 hiding places and salt mines, caves, and castles containing millions of cultural objects stolen by the Nazis.
So again, places that the Nazis had set up, salt mines, caves, castles, those kinds of places that had become basically storage areas for these great treasures, right, Robert?
Yeah, the salt mines, salt mines, copper mines, a variety of mines, all were essentially bomb-proof. And the war was, in a way, playing out for Nazi Germany in reverse, the same pain and misery they'd inflicted on the countries of Western Europe, England, so prominently so with the bombing. And now, of course, the Western Allied bombs were devastating German cities and placing the works of art from Germany's own museums at great risk. So the museum curators there hid their own works of art alongside, oftentimes, many of the works of art and cultural objects that the Nazis had stolen. And some of these mines, like the Althausee mine, the last major mine found that contained many of the works of art destined for Hitler's museum, are horizontal mines that go back a mile and spread in a zillion different directions. Wow. But they're not really up and down. And the other mines, for the most part, were vertical mines, sometimes 2,000 feet deep, using elevator shafts. The mines actually were pretty good storage facilities, aside from them being impregnable to bombs. The humidity was about right, 60% or so. The temperature was 48 degrees, which is colder than we know we like to keep museums. But these paintings have grown up in cold weather through the ages, and they can tolerate that. The principal condition issue is humidity, and this humidity was actually fairly favorable to them.
You know, what struck me about the book, Robert, is as you go through it, these Monuments Men became, you know, essentially like reporters, you know, trying to ferret out information from people along the way as to where these things might be hidden. What kinds of people wound up helping them along the way?
There were, I think, other people of goodwill, obviously, in Europe on occasion or two. They were German, trying to – they were all acknowledging what these monuments officers had much greater understanding of, which is that works of art are like little children. We wouldn't go drop them off at a playground and wish them good luck and come pick them up whenever we felt like it. These works of art that grace the fabulous Nelson Atkins Museum, like so many other great museums in the world, have survived over the centuries because people before us said that they were important and made an effort to make sure that they were preserved for future generations. The monuments officers being these middle-aged museum curators, architects, artists themselves sometimes, had a great understanding of that. They were extremely articulate and well-educated. Many of them had been educated in Europe. They'd all traveled there. Oftentimes they spoke at least a second language. Some mm-hmm. spoke more. So they had an acute understanding of what was hanging in the balance here and were very, very good with people skills. A bunch of them were academics that had been teaching college students that were now, in many cases, their superior officers, higher in rank, but half their age. In fact, the age of some of their kids at home. So they were very good at winning them over because the monuments officers, in addition to not having jeeps and other resources, didn't have command authority. Their capacity to influence whether an artillery commander aimed at a church or not was dependent upon their ability to, in a way, persuade them against doing so.
Let's do this. Let's take a break. When we come back, Robert, let me ask you about the French museum worker at the Louvre who basically spied on the entire Nazi art operation, a key source for the Monuments Men. And we'll also talk about the new movie itself coming out and get Robert Edsel's take on how good of a film is it. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. This hour, we're talking about the Monuments Men and a new movie coming out. We're visiting with Robert Edsel. He's the author of the book, The Monuments Men, Allied Heroes, Nazi Thieves, and the Greatest Treasure Hunt in History. It's been turned into a Hollywood movie this week, starring George Clooney and a whole bunch of folks. Julian Zugasa-Goiti is also here. He's director of the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art. And Mackenzie Mallon is a department researcher at the Nelson Atkins. She focuses on European painting and sculpture. And Robert, tell us about the help that the Monuments Men got from this French museum worker at the Louvre who basically spied on the entire Nazi art operation.
You're referring to a lady named Rose Vallon, whose yes. character in the film is played by Cate Blanchett, and brilliantly so. Rose Vallon is, in the States, we would call her a curator. In France, in the male-dominated world there, she was looked at as a custodian. But she was in charge of this museum known as the Jeu de Paume. If any of your listeners have walked from the Place de la Concorde to the Louvre Museum. They've walked right past it, probably not noticed it, as I didn't for many years that I visited Paris. It's a museum that was converted into a warehouse, if you will, Nazi looting headquarters. All the works of art stolen from French collectors, so many of whom, many were famous, world famous collectors. Some were some of the great dealers in the world and also collectors. Thousands of works poured through this museum between 1940 and 44. Rose Vallon, who understood German, was in charge of keeping the place operational, but unbeknownst to the Germans, making secret notes, sometimes on the back of envelopes, stuffing them in her dress, digging through trash cans at night.
Wow.
She came close to being caught twice. Once they had her pretty much dead to rights, but she managed to talk her way out of it. They would have shot her had they found out. And at the end of the war in France, when it was when Paris was liberated in August 1944, she was very reluctant to turn over this information to her own countrymen,
right,
because the problem with collaboration was so severe. And she was encouraged to work with one of the key monuments officers, Jim Rorimer, whose character is played by Matt Damon. Rorimer was a key museum figure who was a director of the Cloisters Museum at the Met and would go on to become the sixth director of the Met after the war. And they had a courtship, if you will. I mean, Rose Vallon did not trust anybody. Rorimer and Vallon each recognized they each had half of a key to destiny, and they were people of destiny. But while Rose Vallon knew where these works of art had been taken and had the list of all the works of art, she had no method of transportation. She wasn't in the army. She was a woman in a man's world. Rorimer, on the other hand, could go where he needed to go, being a lieutenant in the U.S. Army, in the 7th Army, but he didn't know where to go. So it's a fascinating dynamic that Matt and Kate do a tremendous job bringing out in the film.
Well, Robert, speaking of all this, so how is the movie? How good a film is it?
I think it's fantastic. You know, we've mentioned Matt Damon and Cate Blanchett, but Bill Murray, Bob Balaban, Hugh Bonneville, Jean Dujardin, of course, George Clooney. It's an incredible cast he's assembled to tell a story that's never been told on the big screen, which is a daunting task. 2 hours goes by at the snap of a finger. The music by Alexander Desplat's deeply moving. But I think George and his producing partner, Grant Heslov, have done quite a good job. I was a consultant to them as they worked through the script and then on the set three occasions. It's a tough story to tell when you consider the vast amount of time that's involved and the geographical scope of this, trying to condense this down to 2 hours. But I think they've captured the essence. Certainly, the overarching principles of the story and what took place are well represented in the film. People are going to understand that these men and women not only risked their lives to save works of art, too, were killed during combat. And I think also it has a lot of the humor that these monuments officers went through. I mean, let's face it, a bunch of middle-aged art scholars are pretty unlikely combat soldiers, and they had a lot of funny stories that they told in their letters, which we found, and that really has been the key to telling their story.
Mackenzie, Julian, have you guys seen the film?
No, not yet.
We're waiting with great anticipation. There's going to be a premiere here this week, and so we're and with great anticipation to see the movie.
I bet you'll be first in line to go see it then, right?
Of course.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Actually, on Friday and Saturday night at 7 p.m. out at the Legends Theater, we're going to have a post-movie discussion with myself and our Director of Curatorial Affairs, Antonia Bostrom, and our Curator of European Art, Nicole Myers. And we're going to discuss the film and the Monuments Men for the Nelson Atkins and what is realistic in the film and what isn't. And so we encourage anyone who's interested to come out those two nights.
You know, in this story, Mackenzie, the arc of this story, which episode, what grabs you the most in terms of the story that you find just the most fascinating?
You know, in my personal research on the Nelson Atkins Monuments Men, I find Paul Gardner to be fascinating.
I was going to ask you about him.
Absolutely. He was extremely courageous.
Lots of harrowing experiences here.
Lots of harrowing experiences. We're going to have a display in the block lobby starting this Wednesday, February 5th, of some materials from our archives that were from his personal papers, letters, envelopes, and some photographs that describe some of the experiences that he had. He hit the ground running. He arrived in Naples in October 1943. The city was devastated, and he really had to get started right away evaluating the monuments there. And I think the best story is that in a small hilltop town near Naples, he knew there was a private collection there. He knew it was important. He needed to check on it. He found a military policeman to escort him. They literally crawled on their hands and knees up this hill, shells falling all around them to get to the top. And when he got there, he found crates of the artworks. Some of them had been broken open by the Nazis, and some of the best things had been taken, but he was able to recover a Manet and an important altarpiece. So I think the heroism of some of these men is what has been the most interesting aspect to me.
I mean, all for the sake of art. It's just fascinating to me.
All for the sake of art. Yeah, they were willing to lay down their lives because they knew that the importance of the cultural heritage of Europe, not just to the Europeans, but to the world.
Julian, how about you? What episode sort of grabs you by the collar and won't let you go here?
Well, I think the next movie, and I hope that Mr. Edsel wants to start writing the book and eventually have just as great cast as he has for his current book, is Lawrence Sigmund. Sigmund, who was our second director, who was the curator of Oriental art first, and who as a young man spent a lot of time in China, was deployed and in the Pacific, and he was to serve with General Douglas MacArthur, Tokyo's headquarters. But there are stories about him flying into China in his plane, landing, and by hapstance being there at the moment that the Japanese are about to surrender to the Chinese, and they prefer to surrender to an American official rather than to the Chinese directly. So here again, it's a humanist, someone who is an art historian, someone who knows and all of the subtleties of Chinese art, is in a military plane in combat fatigues, and then the Japanese surrendered him. This is the amazing kind of stories that these monuments men are living. And again, there's a very humble side of them that then they come back, they barely touch upon that, and they're real heroes, but at the same time, they're heroes because what they were searching, what they were fighting for was, again, to save the greatest masterpieces of mankind. And once they're back in after the war, they're doing that. They go, most of them work in great museums, they have almost a connection, and that's, again, their territory where they really blossom. And again, the great institutions that had Monument Man shine today as great museums.
Well, if you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're talking about the Monuments Men, a new motion picture, and the story about this very courageous group of men and women who worked during World War II to save some of Western civilization's great masterpieces. If you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888. You can also email us to updodate@kcur.org or tweet us at @KCURUpToDate. You know, Robert Edsel, I've been slow in sort of recognizing this point that we're talking about the monuments men, but we're also talking about some women, too. Tell us about that.
The women played an important role behind the scenes. Of course, they couldn't be in combat, so their role is a little bit less visible. I speak about, of course, Rosa Vallon, who's an exception to the rule. But there were women such as Ardelia Hall, Edith Standen, who was the curator for one of the great collectors in the United States, Joseph Widener, whose pictures were donated to the National Gallery in Washington, Evelyn Tucker, and others that several of whom I've interviewed. And have since passed. These women were originally working to gather information for maps that were given to Allied pilots to steer away from the important cultural targets. After the war, they went to Europe. They ran a lot of the offices to enable the monuments officers that were in the field going around removing these works of art from archives from castles and other places to take them to central collecting points and begin the sorting process to determine who the rightful owners were. And this was a real challenging task. These facilities that they were in, of course, in war-torn Europe needed coal for heating. Everybody wanted coal, very difficult to obtain. The cars were constantly breaking down. They had to have a motor pool, and that cars were critical to be able to do their job. I had one monuments lady described for me, just arranging a phone call might take all day because it was a series of relay phone calls, and if the line went down on any one of the relays, then she had to start all over the next day. So they played an important role in the sorting process and in the return of these millions of objects that I mentioned. They are part of the stories that I've written about in all three books, Rescuing Da Vinci, which is more of a photographic telling of the story, Monuments Men, my second book, and Saving Italy, which Julian is right. There should be a film at some point in time about Lawrence Sickman and the work in Asia, but I hope the next film up will be the story of what took place in Italy so that we can address Paul Gardner's great contribution and some other monuments officers and their work there. That is another extraordinary and very, very different story than what took place in Northern Europe.
You know, the story, Robert Edsel, of how you got involved in pursuing this story to begin with is fascinating to me. You actually worked in the energy field, oil and natural gas. How did you get involved in writing these books, including your latest, The Monuments Men?
Well, latest books, Saving Italy, which
that's
came
right,
out in May
right,
last
yes.
year. Well, this has really been my third career. My first career was an aspiring tennis player, and I had aspirations to be a professional player. And I was good enough to have scratched out a living, but I determined I couldn't be great. And I took a job out of college, the first job that I could get, which was working for a guy who was in the energy industry. And I really enjoyed it and liked it. And started my own company a few years later. My family wasn't wealthy, but I had a couple fortunate things happen at the beginning and built it up to a pretty sizable company by 1995. But at 39 years old, I had a 2-year-old son I was not seeing. I had an acute understanding how, with the snap of a finger, 39 can become 59. And I wasn't living the life that I wanted to lead from a sense of meaningfulness. And I had a chance to sell my company and find jobs for all my employees. Moved to Europe, settled in Florence, started studying art and architecture, and one day walked across the Ponte Vecchio, which was the only bridge in Florence not destroyed by the Nazis in August 44 when they fled the city. And I wondered how, in the face of the most destructive conflict in history, a war that claimed the lives of 65 million people, so many of the works of art survived, and who were the people that saved them? And I didn't know the answer, and I wasn't embarrassed about that, but I was hugely embarrassed, feeling like I knew, like most people, a little bit about World War II. It had never occurred to me to wonder. And as I started asking people that lived in Europe to the person, they all said, "Great question, what's the answer?" And I said, "I don't know, you live here, you should know." So it began really with the most innocent of curiosities, and with World War II being the most documented photographed event in history, a great frustration on my part that finding the answer wasn't simple, in particular through images, which is why I started first book with Rescuing Da Vinci. So, you know, I've traveled all over the country. I've spoken at almost every museum in the country.
Yeah.
It's been great going to Kansas City because the people in your city, unlike some in other cities, have an acute appreciation for the role that these monuments officers, Paul Gardner and Lawrence Sickman in particular, played in the founding of this tremendous, one of our country's greatest museums, the Nelson Atkins, and Julian and Mackenzie are to be commended for their work bringing to light more publicly some of the records and documents they have in their archive, and also Mackenzie's work getting this stuff online. I've seen it. It's very good. It's informative, and it's interesting for people.
That's great. Let's go to some phone calls at 816-235-2888. Our topic today, The Monuments Men. John from Overland Park. John, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Go ahead, John.
Hey, I was just curious. I was fortunate enough to take in that David Letterman show in New York City, and his guest was Bill Murray. And, excuse me. One of the questions asked of Bill was if he knew of any modern-day Monuments Men that happening recently or now in either Iraq or the Afghanistan wars.
Julian, what do you know about that? Anything?
Well, there are efforts that to bring our military today to a sensibility of that. And among things that I've seen is, for instance, cards, playing cards distributed to the military with the monuments so that they are aware and sensitized to that.
Robert Edsel, what else do you know about that?
Well, we did a horrible job after World War II, and it only took about 60 years for these men and women's legacy to be completely forgotten and lost. In the aftermath of the American-led invasion of Iraq in 2003, there was horrible looting, not only of the museum, but also their other cultural treasures. We did not have monuments officers there, in my view. That was a horrible mistake. We paid a tremendous price for it in the court of public opinion. Probably a billion people in the world inflamed, thinking Americans don't care about culture or we don't care about it because it was Islamic culture, which, of course, is nonsense. And there were monuments officers, arts and monuments officers, they call them today in the Army, that went there in 2004, Corinne Wagner being one of the prominent women who were there to fix the problem. But, of course, as our parents taught us, first impressions matter the most. And that first impression was very dangerous. Since then, the Army has made a considerable effort to train not volunteers from the private sector, as took place with the monuments officer in World War II, but train military people to know about these things. And I think that's a good effort. But in my opinion, we are destined to fail again if we do not have the CEO of the country, the president, speak these noble words of President Roosevelt and General Eisenhower about the importance of respecting the cultural treasures of all countries. And it's one of the things that I believe that the film's going to change, and one of the roles of the Monuments Men Foundation that I'm the chair of, that we're trying to take the film and make sure that we make those permanent changes in the way we go about trying to protect treasures in future conflicts.
Again, that new film starring George Clooney and Matt Damon opens up this weekend. Let's go to Mike from Kansas City, Missouri. Mike, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Yes. My question is, what do historians think that the Germans were going to do with the art treasures? And why? What brings that to mind is the supposed thing that Hitler wanted to is Rome burning, or I think it was Rome, not Paris. But were they going to destroy them or loot them for their own personal?
Mackenzie, take a whack at that, would you please? What were they going to do with it?
Sure. Hitler was a big art connoisseur himself. He was a fair to middling artist. And
that's right. Famously so, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
He was the art that he was collecting, especially in some of the salt mines, he wanted to put into a museum in his hometown of Linz, Austria. Mm-hmm. It was going to be dedicated to his mother. He wanted it to be the greatest museum in the world of Germanic art, Germanic in quotes. He wanted to fill it with the best that Germany had to offer in the way of art. And so that was one thing that he wanted to do with some of it. But I think you may be referring possibly to what was called his scorched earth policy, his Nero decree. At the end of the war, he had given orders to some of his staff that if the Reich were to fall, they were to destroy as much as they possibly could and not let the Allies receive anything that Germany had collected, not benefit in any way. So, for example, with our painting, the L'Argelière, it was in the Altassee salt mine. One of Hitler's men actually had bombs put into that mine.
I was going to say it was rigged, right? Jury
rigged. It was rigged. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The bombs were probably removed before the monuments officers got there. Absolutely. He didn't want anyone to know or to have what he had collected for himself. So it's a very true story that he just wanted to take everything that he could, and he didn't want anyone else to have it afterwards.
Mike, I appreciate the phone call. Let's go to Bob from Fairway. Bob, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to point out that it's probably not really clear in all cases.
Hey, Bob, if you're talking on a speakerphone, why don't you pick up the phone and talk to us directly? That would help a little bit.
Sure.
There you go. You there, Bob? We lost him. Okay, again, our number here, 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Our email address, uptodate@kcur.org. You know, recently a new trove of Nazi-looted art was found in Germany. How did the art world react to that, Julian? What happened there?
Well, I think you're referring to the Görlitz trove.
Yes, yes.
Around 1,500 objects that had not been identified before. And I think it is, again, this work is not finished. And as Robert Edsel mentioned, there were more than 5 million works of art that were looted and plundered, and so many still to be found. There's a lot of work doing. So it took the world by surprise that someone could be an heir to a well-known dealer that was on the two sides, Hildebrandt Gurlitt, and that he could be still sitting with a trove of art in the middle of Munich. So it is with surprise. There is a commission right now that is trying to identify the rightful owners, and it will take some time to elucidate all that.
So again, the key here is that the efforts to track down this lost art, this stolen art from back in World War II, that effort continues.
It continues, and I think it has not been strong enough, and some countries have been more slow to come at it. I think there's been a lot of attention in recent years. There was also an important book by Hector Feliciano, who brought to light at the turn of the 21st century some of the polluting, and little by little more awareness and more efforts have been conduced.
Robert, Steve, one of the roles of the Monuments Men Foundation is we've created a toll-free number, 1-866 World War II Art, WWII Art, which allows people who may have something that were brought home by a soldier as a souvenir, innocently enough. And we're not interested in helmets and bayonets, but we're talking about paintings, library books that are from European libraries, important documents perhaps taken from Hitler's home in Berchtesgaden. The Monuments Men Foundation works to honor the service of our soldiers and also illuminate the path home for these things that are cultural objects and should be returned. And we've had a number of things brought to us. And so certainly if your listeners have something that they don't know where it came from, but maybe had someone that served overseas or a displaced person, we'd love to hear about it, and they can contact us. Again, we don't charge anybody anything. We're just completing the mission of the Monuments Men.
Mackenzie, tell us just briefly about one of the local guys, Patrick Kelleher, who worked at the Wiesbaden Collecting Point. What's that story?
Oh, sure. Well, the Wiesbaden Collecting Point was one of four collecting points that the Army set up after the war in order to collect all of these things that they were finding. Like Mr. Edsel said, I mean, there were over 2,000 different places where these artworks were hidden. They had to do something with this. So they sent them all to these collecting points in order to catalog them, to determine where they came from, and then to send them back to their rightful owners. And Patrick Kelleher worked at the Wiesbaden Collecting Point, where they process mostly German collections, some things from the Prussian museums, the Nefertiti bust that's in the Berlin Museum went through there. And while during his time there, he was one of 35 officers who signed something that they called the Wiesbaden Manifesto. It actually expressed their concern at the U.S. government's mandate that they send everything back to the U.S. They thought that was a bad idea. And so he was able to be part of that, which was great.
Well, all this is such an amazing story. We're out of time. I want to thank Robert Edsel, author of the book, The Monuments Men, Allied Heroes, Nazi Thieves, and the Greatest Treasure Hunt in History, Julian Zagasa-Goitia, who heads the Nelson Atkins Museum, and Mackenzie Mellon, who also works there. Y'all were great. Thanks so much for taking some
time.
Thank
you very much.
Really appreciate it. You can learn more about the activities that Nelson Atkins has planned around the release of the film Monuments Men, as well as a trailer for the movie, on our website. Just go to kcur.org/uptodate. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, Beth Lipoff, and Cody Newell. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.